Triangle of Sadness is over. We are just getting started here on Post Show Recaps, new daily podcast series, The Daily Oscar. My name is Grace. I'm here with my co-host, Ariel. Ariel, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm just, my stomach's a little upset. I feel like I had some bad seafood or something. We'll see how it goes.
No good. Be careful. We are not alone, of course, bringing in guests as often as we can on our daily Oscar series. And I'm delighted to be joined by Chantel. Chantel, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm really happy that we're doing this virtually, so I won't have any projectile vomit spray across my face with Ariel being unwell right now. So happy to be here, but happy it's virtual.
Yes, we're chatting about Triangle of Sadness, as you would see from the name of the podcast that you clicked on and clicked play. Nominated for Best Picture. As we dive into it, make sure you subscribe, postshowrecaps.com/movies for every one of our daily Oscars pods, as well as our usual coverage covering Cocaine Bear, Creed 3, all the good stuff. Chantel, Aaron and I have chatted about Triangle of Sadness, a movie I think we both really liked. Of course, you can catch that recap in the feed, but you haven't chatted about it. So what do you think of Triangle of Sadness?
I really enjoyed it. I wasn't really sure what to expect. Obviously, when a picture is being nominated for Best Picture, you're going to assume that it's going to be pretty good. And so I kind of went in just being like, okay, well, let's see why it was nominated for Best Picture. And I think that it was really beautiful. I thought that I was intrigued by all the characters and the dynamics of the social class. I just found it all very fascinating, but then it also had a little hint of kind of humor. And I was like, what am I watching? This is kind of wild. And so it was enjoyable for me on kind of all ends. I definitely liked this movie. And yeah, I wasn't expecting it to be the movie that it was. And yeah, I was pleasantly surprised.
Well, I'm glad it worked for you on all ends, because it was coming out of all ends in the second act of the movie. I was surprised a little bit too. I think going into it, I wasn't exactly sure what to expect, other than that it's sort of in the vein of these sort of movies commenting on rich people at the moment, or TV shows. We obviously have Succession and The White Lotus, and then we had this, and The Menu, I think, fits into that archetype. And this won the Palme d'Or, so it was sort of on my radar. It's a bit long, but it's a comedy. It's a black comedy, certainly. But I do think, I always say this, that my favorite comedies are dramatic and my favorite dramas are filled with comedy. And so I feel like, yeah, you could call this a comedy that has drama or a drama that has a bunch of comedy in it. And I think either of those billings sort of work for it, Ariel.
Yeah, absolutely. It's to your point, the best of both usually has a little bit of the other. It's almost like the way the yin yang symbol has a seed of the other thing on the other side of it. So you could argue it won't work without a little bit of comedy or drama either way. But this movie has it all, and it's arguably a little too long, but I think it in the end, it justifies everything that is included in it. And for me, the fact that I like the final, I don't know, third, somewhere between the last third to second half, more than I liked the beginning, I think works in its favor for sure. Because sometimes, unfortunately, it kind of works the other way, where you are super interested and then you kind of fall off towards the end.
I think the fact that they had it in parts made it seem less long. So we are like, okay, we got this part. Okay, this part happened. And then now we're into this part. And so it's kind of like they're little movies in one big movie. And so I feel like it just made it less long. Because when I was first saw it, I was like, oh, 2.5 hours. Okay. So it's a long one.
Yeah.
Are any of the Best Picture noms, are any of them less than 2 hours? They're all so long.
Less than 2 hours.
Top Gun is 2 hours, just about. Avatar is a million years long. Elvis is so wild. I'm going through them in my head. I'm sure there might be one, but I doubt it. Usually, to that point, a little bit. Usually, these prestige movies, they're never too short.
Right.
Takes something incredibly impressive That would just be like an hour and a half, let's say, for that to get nominated. I'm sure
I think an hour 45 is like the sweet spot. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, that's absolutely like where I would love to see these movies.
When I see a movie that's an hour 40, I'm like, I think they could have cut out 10 minutes. Regardless, like,
not going to win Best Picture though.
Especially these days, don't tell.
Yeah, I don't think any Banshees Then Comes is maybe the closest at coming in. I believe it comes just over 2 hours. I'd have to double check. That 114. So there is one movie that does come in, I believe, under 2 hours. Women Talking also might be slightly under 2 hours as well.
Sure.
Yeah. Actually, Sarah Paul, I think, has specifically said, yeah, it's 104 minutes. She specifically said that she wanted it to be about as close to 90 minutes as she could get. So Banshees and Women Talking, yeah, which you have been on the talked about on a previous special theater podcast.
Yes,
yeah. Yeah, I do think from, you know, the interesting thing about it kind of being three movies, like other than our stars, like really they're the only people who are sort of in every part. This is a movie that I think some of the acts have been what I've heard is like polarizing. So like I do think of like there's a part that like does not work for me as well as everything else. It definitely is the complete mess that happens in act two. Like it's
what
like
a mess.
It's like. It's like slightly over the top in terms of just like how graphic it is.
You don't think her like rolling around and like, I don't know,
her own body fluids,
yeah, and like body fluids and like sliding around. Like the sliding, I was like, okay, you guys are taking it too far here. Like, come on.
It's great. Honestly, I think maybe if it hadn't been for the part specifically where the lady wants to, they're offering her water and she's been throwing up, but she wants champagne still. I'm like, no, but it's just so, like, to your point, Chantal, it is like too much, but I think that's, you know, the movie would argue that's part of the point, right? Like the excess, you really have to get the excess, good and bad.
Absolutely. So like, I know it's just, it's for the movie for sure, but like, were they seasick or was the food bad? Like what actually happened there? Like combination?
I think you could argue that it's both. Like for sure. The fact that the cook, like to Grace's point, the way she opened the podcast, you know, they, because the people were on the slide, or like the rich woman made the kitchen workers come outside and do, you know, the very fun thing. They left the food out. They were warned that the food would go bad. But I would argue that the movement of the boat was obviously making it worse, right? They were feeling awful, but then the boat is the storm brewing inside them and outside is making it worse.
Yeah, I do. I hadn't caught this that like essentially, or I think you had pointed this out, not on the Triangle of Sadness pod. I think a different podcast where you actually said that, and maybe on the Oscars preview pod where you thought it was maybe actually the fact that they go swimming and everybody like leaves the stuff sort of like unattended for a bit is actually what causes everybody to end up being sick. That like the food might sit out for a little while because they all have to go down the slide. So yeah, I think that's yeah. For me, that piece is like maybe a bit over the top, even in a way that I don't think like the whole like survival nature of the last act. I think and this movie was also very fun on the rewatch to get to see how much like Dolly De Leon is actually like hiding in plain sight in act two the whole time. And we definitely don't see the guy who, I mean, there was this whole thing about whether this one guy is we had a conversation about whether he is actually a pirate or if he actually worked under the ship. I do not think he works under the ship. I didn't see him. I think he is fully a pirate, the guy who pretends not to be a pirate. But yeah, I mean, this is in the vein again of talking about like, yeah, the commentary. And I do think like, I think act one, which we'll get into in our memorable moments, like it's a really interesting commentary on like society and gender roles. And then act two, like, I think probably, you know, in terms of it being over the top, also like, are we more on the nose ever in the movie than like Thomas and Dimitri literally arguing about communism and capitalism, like while they're drunk? Like that's a thesis statement of the movie,
but
kind of.
Woody Harrelson. Just have it.
Wait, it so how do you think Harrelson. That Woody Harrelson got involved in this? Like is there a direct link as why he was chosen? Like obviously he was great.
My guess would be that he was hanging out on some beach and he got people when they were filming the movie.
And
but I don't
like,
know.
Okay, let me just.
No, I. I don't know. I think other like Ruben Östlund is somebody who like has had some success with other like international films. He did The Square and Force Majeure. So I think like, I don't know. I think he just worked. And the other thing too, I do think that works like is that like Woody Harrelson is not super in the movie. Like he's like, he is, but he's really only in that part two. He's not in part one and he's not in part three. So it's also kind of like an easy sign on probably. Yeah, probably got paid more than anybody else and is in the movie for, you know, some of the least amount of time. So, yeah.
But I do think it's quite crazy how it's such a hard thing to talk about. Money. Such a touchy subject, don't you think?
Yeah, I think it's unsexy to talk about money.
Okay, but then why is that?
I don't know, it's just not sexy.
Well, you don't think it's because it's so tied to gender roles? Fucking hell, I mean, the menu in the restaurant didn't even have prices for you.
That's not fair, Cole. I'm always paying.
No. Let's take you out of it here and just talk about women in general.
I'm a generous person, Cole. Ask any of my friends.
Sure, you're generous, but...
What?
Well, when it comes to you and me, we're dealing with roles that I hate. I mean, I don't want to be the man whilst you're the woman. I want us to be best friends.
I don't want to sleep with my best friend.
No, that's not... You don't understand what I'm trying to say. I mean, we shouldn't just slip into the stereotypical gender-based roles that everyone else seems to be doing. I want us to be equal.
All right, well then let's chat about our memorable moments. A good segue. I sort of alluded to your Chantel earlier, but you're chatting about sort of the back and forth in terms of who's paying the bill.
And what's interesting about this is that, so as a person that has done some like online dating and stuff like that, I actually got into a similar argument with somebody before I even went on a particular date. And he said, I would never pay for a first date with a woman. And I was like, well, for me, if you don't actually pay, that means that you're not interested and you just want to be friends, which is fine. But like, if you're inviting me out on a first date, then I would expect for you to pay if you have interest in seeing me further. And so I just had that kind of running in my head with this whole interaction. But then how she kind of was like assuming that he was going to take the bill, it was just very interesting because when I start dating somebody, those lines like kind of blur. And now it's like, oh, okay, no, I don't want you to be taking care of me all the time. Like, let me pay for half of this or half of that. So when you're already in a dating relationship, I feel like it's a little bit more back and forth 50-50. And so I found it really just interesting just to seeing their dynamic and like obviously how extreme it got taken to when we get to like the elevator scene where you just like it was.
Well, it's at the end, she's gonna talk. They're both kind of gonna admit that like that she kind of knew what she was doing, right? That she's clearly like was trying to like get you to pay. Which like I think before that you can kind of see that she says like she had said, oh, if you pay tonight, I'll pay tomorrow. So then he's sort of like waiting for her to pay. That's why he's not offering to pay. And they're both kind of like dancing around like what's happening before they ultimately have the fight, and then when they reveal sort of that like, yeah, it was like kind of like I definitely was like trying to get you to pay. But in the elevator too, the other thing I think that she does that's a little bit is like the way she's like, oh well, I didn't know you wanted to be paid literally right now, so I'll go down to the ATM and get the money. And you're like, I feel like she's also like in that scene like also sort of manipulating the situation to be like, well, if you want to be paid right now, you know, which is very interesting because I actually think by the end of the movie, she's perhaps maybe the most sympathetic character in the movie. Certainly we'll get to Ariel's scene and the way, but like, yeah, her boyfriend is sort of being used to by Dolly De Leon's character, Abigail, for like sex to get like stuff. And then, you know, so it's very interesting how they're able to sort of like, who I think like, you know, she's like talking about like that she's like manipulating him to a degree, and by the end of the movie I'm like feel the most sorry for her. Yeah,
well I know. And so like with just seeing their dynamic and the fact that she came back to the room and she was like openly saying to him, like, yeah, I was manipulating you, and like they were kind of able to come to some sort of agreement here that, like, yeah, you're kind of not being super kind and not keeping your word, but like he also liked that honesty. I just thought it was really interesting because it's something that I think about every single time a Bill shows up, right? Like, I'm always like, okay, am I supposed to like offer to pay half or not offer pay half, or do I just pay half, or do I slide some cash over? Like, it is something that I'm always thinking about, and what my actions actually mean in terms of like the date or the relationship. So it's something that I think about all the time.
Well, Ariel, I think the other piece too that I think is really interesting is when they're in the car and they're having the conversation about gender roles, and she's like, well, I make more money than you. And he says this thing of like, no, but take you out of it. And I feel like it's like the worst time to have this like conversation about like the entire construction of gender roles as like he's like kind of trying to take them both out of it, but actually both of them being in the situation is actually like important to like actually what their dynamic is in terms of like who's paying for the bill.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're trying to hash out their specific relationship. Like, while also to your point, he is trying to similar, I guess, to her, in that she's trying to have it both ways. He's trying to use like those arguments of like gender roles or going against gender roles, perhaps, to aid in his argument of why he thinks he's right. But I think it's so fascinating in general, because even at the end, when she comes into the room and she quote unquote is being honest, I still don't really understand, or I understand, but I can't quite discern her actual motivation. Like, is this just another act? You know, they are more open there, and it does seem like they're like, okay, it's kind of in our mutual best interest to stay a couple, you know, as far as like the Instagram of it all, you know. And then you just wonder, how many times does this conversation happen in real life between like, you know, real life celebrity couples? But it's just so fascinating. She's gaslighting him, then she's not. The way, when you said, I think it was you, Grace, about Michelle Tell, we were like, oh, she's dancing around it. Like, he is actively staring at her at the table, and she's like on her phone, so she's dancing around in like the least actually giving any f's about it way, at least openly, you know, as far as like her what she's putting out. So it's a fascinating dance. Like, I remember watching this part of the movie and being like, wait, isn't there all this stuff on the boat? Like, how is this even going to connect later? But I'm still riveted and like completely intrigued by their dynamic. It's a crazy, it's almost like a to your point, Chantel, like you said, there were movies. This part is like a little play that they put on, basically.
Absolutely. And it also reminds me of, I have a friend who does make more money than her partner. And it was like a new surgence of like more wealth. And so they were out for dinner on New Year's. Yeah, a little bit new money, like always doing fine, but like got a TV show.
A little more. And, like, was, yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
Had a lot more. Mm-hmm. And so they were out for New Year's, and he wanted to take her out for New Year's, and he paid the bill. And I don't even think she knew what the amount was, but she slipped $100 to their server, and he saw. And he threw a fit, being like, you know, I wanted to take you out. Like, you know, I wanted to be able to do this for you. I don't want you to be paying for this. Like it was a big fight over him feeling emasculated by this action. She's like, I just had more money, and I've worked as a server before. And like, I just wanted to give her an extra something regardless of what she gave her. And like, it was just back and forth. And so I'm wondering if she was the one that was always paying for everything in the movie, like if he would not actually appreciate that, him being in the role of kind of always being recipient of the being treated.
Yeah, it seemed to me like he pays a lot, because the way he's so or pays more often, at least, because the way he is so upset about it, like, clearly, you know, he's making less money than her. So like, he is now extra doubly indignant, because he seemingly, at least the way I perceived it, has done this more often. So it's like, I'm the one that has less money, and I have to pay more often for you, the person who ostensibly doesn't need me to pay, or could be even paying for both of us, no problem. And I just want to say that this never happens to me, because I just, I leave before they bring the bill. So, you know, I don't have to worry about it.
Uh-huh. You're that guy. I'll invite you next time.
No, yeah, I mean, to the point, yeah, so to the point of like, if she paid all the time, like, would he then be like, oh, I should be paying, like, you know, I should be paying for you, or at least like the times where like in this scenario, in the anecdote you gave, is like, he's like actively being like, I would like to take you out. And then, you know, that sort of like the idea behind that, like, you know, doing that is then like, I don't want to say undermine, because I don't know your friends, but like, it's how he sort of felt in the moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting to think about. But I saw a great, I think it was a tweet the other day that was talking about how, or it may have been a TikTok that was like, essentially like, the only reason this whole thing existed, like a man paying, is because like women weren't allowed to have bank accounts. So like, there was no way for a woman to pay, and that's why the man pays. So whenever you're mad at this whole situation, you're mad at the patriarchy. So yeah.
just so you know. As usual, so you know. It always comes back to the patriarchy. Yeah.
And Ariel, wow. You were talking about, you were talking about not paying. No, you were talking about how, we've rung up a huge bill for PSR and I'm going to need you to pay. You're talking about these like relationships that are like sort of manufactured, that they're like, yeah, it's in our best interest to stay together. There's a whole TikTok sub, you know, rabbit hole you could go down to if you want, of like fake celebrity relationships that are clearly manufactured by PR teams. It's very fascinating.
I have to go.
Yeah. But wasn't one of them like Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes? Wasn't that like one of them?
So, yeah. Yeah.
That seems like a big one, that poor child.
Yeah. So, I mean, this movie, we talked about it being like almost 3 hours. This part one is really only 30 minutes, and it's really good. There's also like, I you know, in terms of like his place in this world, I also do love the scene where they need everybody to move down one seat, and then he doesn't have a seat, in the front row. It just shows that like, you know, she is such a bigger star than him, and even being near her is like not enough for him to be like recognized in this moment. I think it's so funny. And the thing I thought was interesting about the scene, that like, I'm wondering how much Ruben Östlund is deciding in terms of, in this moment, she pays on the credit card, but then her credit card gets declined. And so that too is an interesting, but we're like, yeah, she makes more money, but then she has like this credit card decline, right? And so I'm like so fascinated by, is this just a detail he puts in to be like, you know, to create conflict that like now it's more awkward because like he's wanted her to pay, and then she goes to pay and she can't pay? Or is this like, you know, just like is there some deeper commentary to like her card not working? I'm really fascinated.
I was kind of thinking that she chose the card that was maxed out.
Oh, interesting.
Like, that's, I was thinking,
and
that,
then
like,
they don't accept the other card, right? That she has. They don't.
Well,
right?
He was like, no, I'll get it. I'll take this. Yeah, they didn't accept the card. Yeah, you're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then he says, yeah, you take this one, right? And they.
I think that's a really interesting reach on top, but I started to suspect, and I don't think that anything that comes after that I can remember, at least, disproves this suspicion, but ultimately, to the movie's credit, I think it ends up not mattering, because as we all know, the movie continues on its journey and, you know, lots of disgusting and beautiful things happen. But I started to suspect that she like was just broke. Like, there was this idea of like her misrepresenting herself and kind of made it seem like, and you know, clearly for her, under the suspicion of mine, it's tied to her ego, right? So she wants to seem like she's doesn't like has all this money, but she allows him to pay, but really for whatever, like, it just screams scam to me. There was something about it of like, oh, I'll get
what
it.
What does she do with her money though? Then
I don't know. Maybe she has a gambling addiction.
Well, one of the things I think it's interesting, we'll chat more. I think we can chat more about this, because I think that the middle section, I think, is very much about like capitalism, and it's, and while there is this thing of like who's paying the bill, whatever, I do feel like the first part, I think, really, actually, while it does seem more isolated from the rest of the movie than I think part two to part three does, I feel like in part three there is this idea of like transactional relationships that we can get into as we talk about Ariel's scene.
Is there anything you wish for?
Sorry?
Is there anything you wish for?
Well, I don't know. That's so sweet of you, madam, but I'm perfectly fine, okay. Yeah.
But if today was your last day alive?
What would you wish for?
I have no idea.
Have you been for a swim today?
No, not today.
Why don't you go for a swim right now?
because this is exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, that's so kind of you, madam. But unfortunately, we're not allowed to go for a swim during working hours, so...
I want all of the stuff to go for a swim. I want you all to go for a swim. I really feel that I have had one of these moments.
Yeah, well today might be a little bit problematic.
Problematic?
Yeah, because today we have the captain's dinner.
Who cares about the captain's dinner? This will only take half an hour. Come on now. You work too hard. Come on.
Yeah, well, let me see what I can do.
Okay.
But let's shift to the scene that I picked, which is my favorite moment of the movie, I think, for sure, which is when the staff have been told, you can't say no, say yes to everything. And then the staff get asked, okay, well, let's switch roles. You all will go for a swim and we'll cater to you. And she's trying to say no, but she ultimately has to say yes. And everybody in the boat has to not only go in the pool, they also have to go on the slide. And it is so funny because I think the idea of like the customer is always right and the customer is asking for something that is so absurd and stupid. And yet they have to do it, and they're all and they can't get the, like, Woody Harrelson, Tom, the captain, is like nowhere to be found because he's I think, you know, he's drinking or whatever. And so they like can't have a reason to get out of it, and they ultimately all have to do it in order to try and get the biggest tip possible from these rich people. I think it's so funny. It's just like pure this is why this movie is a comedy for me, Chantel. Yeah.
Definitely. I watch Below Deck, and so it just reminds me of Below Deck and all the things that they're doing just to get these tips. And like, they'll be crawling around on all fours dressed like a reindeer for a Christmas party. Like, and so it just really
is that true? Is it true? On Below Deck?
Yes,
okay,
yes.
I've never been a Below Deck person, but I recently also got sucked into a Below Deck TikTok rabbit hole, and I think I need to start watching Below Deck. So.
I mean, it's there's no competition, so it's not shows at all. But
yeah.
Like, if I've worked in the service industry, so I have an understanding of what happens, like when the customer is always right or the guest is always right. I've actually even also worked on not a cruise, but I just like would go around the harbor when I was living in Vancouver, and so. Mm-hmm. I've experienced where you have to kind of say yes to everything. Yeah. And I just love the fact that like they had to say yes. And even the beginning of the meeting, all the different stews and whatnot, them chanting and getting all hyped together. And I'm like,
and the way it plays into the end where I forgot that this happened, that Below Deck, the people who are like the immigrant workers are hearing these people chant money, money. It's
that was
awkward.
Probably the funniest part for me. It's just like the people like, money. I was like, what?
What are we going to get? A big tip. It's like,
It's bizarre. It's like cultish. It's like cultish behavior. I mean, you know, the cult of money.
I mean, I enjoy the cult of money personally.
Right.
And like, if I was like a worker, I'd be like, oh my God, you want me to go on the slide? Okay, sure. Sign me up. Like, there'd be no hesitation for me. I'd be like, oh, you want me to get into the hot tub? I'm like, absolutely. Your wish is my command.
Start watching Below Deck if they're like projectile vomiting the way they do.
I mean, they get drunk quite a bit, so it's possible.
It seems like it's close. Yeah.
But I think they blur it out.
It's just I just think it's so funny, and it's such a, like, I think in terms of this movie being like satirical, it's such a good satire on like cater to the rich, and like of course the particularly the woman who gets cast as like the one who has to go into the pool first is so, the way she's so nervous, and she goes well, no, and it's like, oh, are you saying no? And she goes, well, no, I'm not saying no, you know. It's like,
yes,
so
no.
Perfect.
Yes,
so,
no.
yes I am not saying no, you know. It's so funny, it's so good. I really love it. This part of like of act two before we get the literal shit show, I think is very very funny.
And that part, it's more impressive that it's funny, that part you were just talking about, Grace, of like the yes no with the woman, because I talk about this sometimes. It's something that they show in the trailer, so I was like, you know, sometimes they're revealing too many things, or it's not as funny when it lands, but it's so funny. Yeah. If anything, it's more funny in the moment once you actually earn it. So that just speaks to like how, you know, how effective that moment is, and how deeply uncomfortable, yet like you said, incredibly hilarious that whole thing is.
Yeah. I think the shitty nature of capitalism is that, like, the part that sucks here is that, like, yeah, like, these rich people, you have to cater to these rich people, but the other reason to cater to these rich people is that you will get a shred of their money, which is also a thing that happens. Just that mindset of, like, you know, what can you these little morsels you can offer people comes up in your scenario.
Hey, I was just wondering if I could borrow the backpack.
I'm good.
Yeah, I know. What are you going to do, Yaya?
I'm gonna go for a hike over the mountain and see if I can find something.
I'll go with you.
It's okay, I can go by myself.
No, Yaya, it's not safe for you to go alone. I'll go with you.
Okay.
Do you want me to come with you?
No, you stay here. I need some time alone with her. Yeah.
The scene you have picked is Abigail's big decision.
Yes, her big dilemma, as I as I put it. It's the end of the movie, and I believe it's literally like the last 10 seconds. It's like the last shot of the movie, ultimately. Yeah. Like when you look at her face.
If you preset it up, the idea is that they're gonna go and try to explore on the other side of the mountain, which they have not previously done. So they're gonna go on a hike. I believe it's Yaya is going to do it on her own before Abigail decides she's gonna go with her. And so it's Abigail and Yaya who go to the other side of the mountain. And when they get there, they find like an elevator that's going to lead up to potentially like a resort. The island they've crashed on is another resort or a resort that they're on, which is sort of hilarious reveal in its own. But then, yeah, you get they're going to sit and wait. And Yaya, again, to what I was saying before, Yaya offers Abigail like, oh, we get back, like, you could work for me, which Abigail this whole time in the act three has become like the queen of the island. You know, and it's such a snub that she was not nominated for best supporting actor.
Yeah, well, I don't know all the nominees.
You talked about it. It's a snub.
Oh, Ariel, you lagged.
Ooh.
Am I frozen? Oh no.
You're not frozen.
Hello, can people hear me? I'm sorry.
All good. I think you're good now.
But I'm choppy. No. Hold on.
No, I think he's super.
Let me refresh. Hold on. I'm coming right back.
Yeah.
What was I gonna say?
We'll
pause.
Yeah. Yeah, that's okay.
All good.
Hey.
Look better.
Sorry about that.
No, that's okay.
I think
I started saying I don't really know who everybody that was nominated, but I definitely think that she deserves to be nominated is what I was starting to say.
And okay. Can we, let's just, so I think everything, the audio
everything
will be fine.
You said, I think was fine. Great.
Right. So you just start what you were going to say, Ariel, and then I'll say what I say after.
Okay. Yeah. So we see that elevator and it's just so funny and tragic, like everything that they have gone through, all of the hardships, the entire Survivor season that they have lived through on the island. It's been so intense. It's been funny. They have changed. There has been like, they have literally created a society. They have food, you know, there's commerce, arguably the way Abigail like treats, you know, Yaya's boyfriend.
Carl,
thank you. Of course he has like the most generic name, but it's like that final moment of they kind of bonded and they were understanding each other. And I think that's part of the reason that that Abigail wanted to go with her to have like that girl time, you know, because obviously Yaya was getting jealous of Carl having sex with Abigail. It's so ridiculous. And then the idea that like, and again, this speaks to the one of the reasons that this final moment is so effective is it just hammers home the themes of the movie yet again of like, okay, you crashed on this island, you created this other society outside, quote unquote, of like the real world. But then once the real world comes crawling in, Abigail was able to get all this power. She was, you know, whether she was democratically elected or she took over like in a hostile way, she has this power and she's not willing to give it up. It's just like capitalism. And then she's going to decide in that moment to perhaps kill Yaya. Like I believe she like looks at the rock and she's kind of like thinking about it because Yaya wants to go and like, oh my God, we found this elevator, we're saved. And Abigail's kind of like, you can tell by her face, like, do we have to be saved though? Like, maybe I can stay here and be the queen forever, which is so short-sighted because they might get, but again, that it doesn't matter if it's short-sighted because emotionally she doesn't want to let go of the power. So it's just, it's also very funny because like, the fact that they're there the whole time, like it's just, it's doing everything the movie was doing overall, but like in within like a 20-second time frame at the very end.
Yeah. At the beginning of that third part, I was like, I thought it was really interesting how how social class disappears when you're stranded on an island, mm-hmm. but then it also how it gets rebuilt in a certain way depending mm-hmm. on, you know, your social standing within that new group. And so I definitely found it fascinating to see her go, Abigail go through those kind of different stages of being like, okay, right now or beforehand, I was below deck, literally. And then after that, now I'm like above ground and like I'm in this powerful position, as you're saying, Ariel. So I really like seeing the difference here because it's the same person and just in circumstantially, like how they can perceive and perceive the world, it can change just depending on where you're fitting in society. So I thought those are very interesting.
I do like though, no matter what situation they're in, Vicky Berlin, who plays up, I believe Paula is her name, just always end up in the same position, which is not on top, but just below. It's like, not under the captain than under Abigail. I think, what do you think, the moment where, so we do see her like holding the rock over Yaya's head. So first of all, is Yaya dead? And second of all, at what point is Carl running in the jungle? Is he running because he hears Yaya get hit over the head? Or is he like, oh my God, I just sent like basically like the woman who's paying me to have sex and my actual girlfriend alone in the woods. And I need to like, I know what a psychopath Abigail is and I need to go run.
Yeah, I actually forgot about the Carl running part of it because it's to your point, it's not immediately clear or it's not clear at all then because then the movie ends. What he's reacting to, because he does seem upset. You know, he has like the look of a person who knows, and he's running, the look of a person who knows that something is wrong. Unless Abigail like missed or didn't hit Yaya hard enough, like I find it really hard to believe that Yaya would have like screamed loud enough for someone else to hear. So I have to believe that that it has more to do with him kind of realizing, oh God, why did I allow them to run off together? That's potentially very dangerous for Yaya.
But I could also see like Abigail making a quite loud sound when she's using that rock. Cause if you could see like all the intensity that she has when she's holding it, like there's no way that she's not going to be like, like and making some sort of very
like how cold blooded is she?
There's no way she's gonna hit over the head with a gigantic rock and not make a sound. I just can't imagine that. So I feel like she definitely makes a sound, and maybe Carl is running towards the scream.
I think unfortunately Yaya is not alive by the end of the movie. All right, let's move on to If It Won, the segment where we decide how we'd feel if at the end of the Academy Awards on Sunday, March 12th, how we'd feel if Best Picture went to Triangle of Sadness. Chantel, I'll let you begin. How would you feel if this movie won Best Picture?
I actually would feel good about it. Now, mm-hmm. For the most part, all the movies that have been nominated for Best Picture, all of them, I'm kind of like, really? Really? This one at least has like a lot of social commentary and it provides a lot of discussion points. I think like, and it's well acted. It looks beautiful. So it really, for me, has all the elements that would make a good movie and a good Best Picture winner. I find personally with most of the other nominees that I just don't know if I would put them in that position. So from I would be happy with this one winning. I think that it's a good movie.
Ariel, what about you?
Yeah, I would be delighted. I think I would be as delighted as I was when I was watching a lot of the movie. I don't think that I think it would be an unexpected winner. Like, as in as much as you can be an unexpected winner while actually being nominated, I think it would be a surprise. And I think it'd be one of those surprises that at least I would appreciate. Like, wow, yeah, everyone had their money on, you know, the two or three top movies as far as the odds makers and as far as like what people quote unquote think deserve it. But this is a deserving movie in and of itself. So I think it would be a fun twist, if I'll put it like that.
Yeah, I think Everything Ever All at Once continues to be in the pole position as the front runner. If you look at sort of what else it's won, I don't think anything else sort of has the same momentum that it does, which is surprising because it's kind of been in pole position for a while. I think that I said this yesterday, a few days ago about All Quiet on the Western Front, which was that I really liked the film. And I think that this film is better than that movie and has a better chance to win. But I also think I will only be disappointed in the fact that I do think that Everything Everywhere All at Once is sort of like doing something that's different than any film has ever done. And that's the reason why, like, I would be most wanting it to win. But I would certainly not be like, in terms of like being like, okay, well, at least it wasn't this. A Triangle Sadness does not fit that criteria. So like, Correct. Yeah. Very fun. And it probably means we'd get Dolly De Leon on the stage at the end of the night, Ariel.
Stop. Oh my God. And then she holds up a rock like over someone's head. And she's like, should I? And then cuts a commercial and the Oscars.
If I was in charge of the Oscars, I would have Dolly De Leon holding rocks over every other, like the best supporting actresses, like all five of them with the night of just like holding a rock.
Or like when they do those screen grabs of like all the nominees, like she's behind them and never
behind them. That's so much funnier than any stupid Ellen giving pizza to people bit. I love it.
All right. Well, we shall see if it wins. The Oscars are March 12th. We have many more movies to get through. But Chantel, thank you so much for joining us to chat about Triangle of Sadness.
Thanks for having me. Honestly, like, I used to be so good at watching movies, but I've definitely, with all of the shows and things that I watch, I don't really have the opportunity to. So whenever you guys invite me, I'm always like, yes, thank you. Yeah. It forces me to do something that I really enjoy. Yeah. And I'm happy to do it anytime.
Okay, well, will not be the last time you're on Post Recaps Theater. Where can people find you and what are you up to?
What am I up to? Basically, Survivor has started. So on my recap channel on YouTube, Reality Realness with 3 S's, we're talking about Survivor, we're talking about Australian Survivor, and we're talking about the Challenge Global that's going to be starting next week. So, yeah, pretty much the Survivor and the Challenge will be happening over on my channel.
So busy. I'm on Twitter at Hi From Grace. Ariel, where can people find you?
I am also on Twitter at That Other Ariel.
We will be back tomorrow with another Best Picture nominee. Until then, I'm Grace. That's Ariel. And this is Post Show Recaps Theater.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.